Welcome in, Houdat Nation, to an exciting episode of the podcast because your Saints did not take any amount of time at all to start making moves, did they? You signed Derek Carr, arguably the best quarterback option available to you this offseason. And you're sitting here. I'm sitting here. Let's not front. Rev's not about to pretend like I wasn't doing the same thing. Sitting here, well, that's probably it. It's the Saints really aren't going to make as many moves after that, right? Wrong. Saints have now re-signed Blake Gilligan, which we kind of expected expected that to transpire. Then we end up, though, signing Jamal Williams, getting a high-end running back, a running back who led the NFL in touchdowns last year. So you could argue the best running back available in free agency, arguably. I mean, that's a case to be made, and I'm not trying to make it seem like the Saints got an overwhelming win, but new quarterback, new running back, and then signed two defensive tackles. That's a really big deal. If y'all have been paying attention, the Saints have needed help at defensive tackle. In fact, I really emphasized in the last episode how you have got to address the interior of the defensive line. Regardless of what your draft plans are, your goal should be to set yourself up to have success in the draft. And that success is usually determined by taking the best potential player that you can take. And then, of course, the expected move that has been announced, but we kind of knew it was coming, was that the Saints have restructured. I mean, it's kind of planned. It's a crazy thing, but Andres Pete, and that's freed up another $10 million. So their cap movement is fine. And looks like we're going to be good. It looks like the Saints are building a team. It looks like it's not the world-ending thing that we're talking about. And then more good news for those paying attention. Charging against Marcus May from his arrest back in August for an alleged firearm has been dropped due to insufficient evidence. So just, it's weird. I mean, somebody better pinch themselves. It's, don't call it a comeback, but I'm just simply saying this is one of the better weeks in Saints free agency history that we can really think of and recall. That we are not used to seeing this team have this level of kickback in a positive way. So shout out to the team for it. I'm pretty daggum happy. Let's get some hoot-ass there in the chat. Shout out to everybody who's here so far. Ted, Taydot, Cam, Craig, Mr. Jerry, Steel, Bill, Cam, T5, the great Saints Garcia, Ronnie Fitzgerald, John Madden, good to see you, Jimbo, Coach Todd, Gerald Stevenson, A.A. Ron, Troy, Crass, Brennan, Marie, Cliff, Slade, Mike, all of y'all, Houdat, welcome in to the show. Again, just a wild and crazy topsy-turvy week for football. I mean, I've got nothing but positives to kind of say. We're going to go through the individual players, but this is kind of a shock. This is not what I expected. I expected a slower, more methodical approach to free agency. And not that I wanted that. It's just that y'all have been here long enough to know how the Saints are, right? Like, we know that they typically take their time and they go through the process and they find their guy. And this year they are being very proactive in free agency. And I personally am very happy about that, because if you want me to believe as a Saints fan that this team is a contender, because they will fight you. I'm not going to say they're literally going to fight, but they're going to fight you because they believe they're a contender right now. They truly do believe that this team is a contending team, a team that can win the division and make a run in the playoffs. Now, everybody in chat, there are some who agree, some who don't. In fact, I know some of y'all well enough who attend this podcast live. I know where you stand on this, and I'm not trying to change your stance nor convince you, but what I am trying to do is reinforce the fact that the Saints believe that they are contenders right now. That's why they bring in two-time Super Bowl champ Kalen Saunders in the interior as a run stuffer, who has also shown the ability to get a little of that interior pass rush. He's coming off a career high of 3.5 sacks, but this is a 330-pound mammoth of a man, but he's 6 foot, great leverage, great lower body control. He can anchor down real well, takes on double teams, and he's 26, turning 27 years old. So he's in the prime of his career. And then you've also had them bring in Nathan Shepard, who we talked about bringing in Sheldon Rankins from the New York Jets, but instead they're bringing in Nathan Shepard from the Jets. He's a little bit bigger, a little bit leaner, 6'4", 315. You would go, well, with him being over 300 like that, you would probably think that he's a just a big run stuffer. But actually, because he's so long and so, you know, tall in terms of the length and the build, that 315 is more like a 295 on some other players. And this is a guy that can also potentially get some interior rush, not as much as we've seen other guys get, but he's also never started. So it's very familiar in terms of like a Kentavious Street type of signing. He's played 5 years with New York. Now he's coming in and playing as a veteran here with the Saints, being part of the rotation. So you just signed a starter. You just signed a rotation guy. And then let's talk about Jamal Williams, who led the NFL last year as a running back with 17 rushing touchdowns. He was also a 1,000-yard rusher. But guy that is a big body who can move the change, gets a lot of first downs. He had 65 first downs last year in only 262 carries. That's a pretty good mark. And this is a guy that, while doesn't have the same level of explosive amazingness that you would, you know, be used to with Alvin Kamara, this is a great counterpart to an Alvin Kamara. And better than that, he is 27 years old, so he still has a couple of years in the proverbial tank, and he's not a guy that's been getting 300 rushes a year. In fact, he's kind of had a spell count his whole career, which I should note that his career has mostly been a healthy career, but he has only rushed for more than 200 times once, and that was last year when he was with Green Bay, and his first year with Detroit, basically 150 carries or less. So he doesn't have a lot of tread on the tires. He's got, or he does have a lot of tread on the tires still. He doesn't have a lot of miles, and he is ready to contribute, signing a 3-year deal. Think I got it all? Oh, yeah. Blake Gillikin's back, and Blake Gillikin will not be wearing number 4 this season. But it's a 3-year deal worth $12 million with 8 fully guaranteed for the running back. And I feel like it's a steal. I really do. I feel like he fits really well as a rotational back in this system. We don't know how long you're going to have Alvin Kamara, and I don't think that this prevents you from going after Alvin Kamara. I don't think that that's something that you should ignore, because you still are probably going to miss him. But in terms of what this does for the team, it really puts them in a great position, because they're filling out their roster needs, and then you're setting yourself up to truly go best player available, whoever it is, that's who they take. And let's not forget, you re-signed Juwan Johnson. And, you know, you've made a lot of moves here. Let's take a look at the roster. We harped on this, and I was really big on this last episode. You have got to get some of the roster updated. But you had multiple positions going unfilled. Right now, the New Orleans Saints only have one starting position that has not been addressed that is open, and that is the slot wide receiver. That was held by Jarvis Landry last year. We'll see what they do this year. But in terms of starters, you are only missing one starter right now, and that's your slot guy, because you just filled it in with your new DTs. Now, that doesn't mean that it has to be set in stone. I'm still really curious to see what happens with Kentavious Street, what happens with Malcolm Roach, and even Albert Huggins to a degree. I mean, a lot of these guys that you've seen in Saints uniforms and part of the rotation, definitely want to see if they'll come back. But right now, great moves being made in New Orleans, and they're solid moves. They're not mind-blowing like, oh, wow, this has just made this team the best team in the NFC. But when we've talked about the Saints being the best team in the conference, it's because they were the best team with depth. Now, I can't, and I wouldn't even pretend to discount the fact that you had Sean Payton and Drew Brees. But when we're talking about overall value and overall impact, a deep team is going to take you extremely far in this league. And I think it's worth noting, because when you've had the injury problems the Saints have had, having a deep team helps with that tremendously, makes up for that even to a degree. And that's something to be excited about. This is winning football style. Now, will it translate to on the field? We'll have to wait and see. But this is a winning team in terms of how they are approaching the roster and how they're adjusting things right now. And let's go over your current listed starters. Remember that this is in March. This is going to change by the time the season starts. But here are your defensive starters: Cameron Jordan, Kalen Sanders, Nathan Shepard, Carl Granderson / Peyton Turner on the front there. Your two starting linebackers will be Demario Davis and Pete Warner. You have a Paulson Adebo, Bradley Roby, Marshawn Lattimore, Honey Badger, and then Marcus May filling out the secondary and the linebacker crew. That is your current set of starters as of March 16th, 2023. Offensive starters are going to be Chris Olave, currently listed, Michael Thomas, Don't know necessarily who the slot is going to be. If you had to go with who's on the team right now, that slot guy is probably going to be a mix of Tre'Quan Smith and Rashid Shaheed. You know, a mix of that. And the reason I say a mix is because there are going to be some things that, you know, this team won't let Tre'Quan go. It's just, he's still here. But in terms of like the running downs, things like that, I still expect to see Tre'Quan if they choose to keep him through camp. And then you look at Rashid Shaheed for some of those big plays. You got James Hurst, which might be Trevor Penning. We'll see how the left tackle is. Andres Pete, Eric McCoy, Cesar Ruiz, Ron Ramczyk, Juwan Johnson, Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara, Jamal Williams now, and then finally Adam Prentice at fullback is your current kind of list as your starter. So there you go. And there's a lot of big names that, you know, because I see Mike mentioned Smoke Monday coming back, and he was somebody that players and coaches alike were excited about, had a lot of positive things to say about him in this past camp. He's making a return. You're going to see a lot of Saints coming back that missed last year because of injury and had some real up-and-coming moments. I mean, there were multiple draft picks that I was really curious to see. How was that going to play out? Let's take a look at some of these names. I'm just going to shout some out. Then we'll get to the chat. I love to reach out to the chat and see what y'all think. But you look at who do I want to mention first? Because there's several here I'm actually kind of excited about. Along the defensive front, you know, you had Jackson, who a lot of us were pretty excited about, right? We thought that that was going to be a potential. We'll see if they choose to continue to draft a guy there. But linebacker was a big one. Let's see. You had two Jacksons last year, didn't you? You did. Wow. Yeah. We completely forgot that both of them were last name Jackson last year. But you have a linebacker who a lot of us were pretty excited about, right? I think that I'm not the only one. And when we had, you know, Jordan Jackson, DT, and then we drafted DeMarco in the fifth round, both of those guys were ones that we thought, hey, could maybe make a roster spot, maybe make an appearance. And DeMarco is still with that. He was on IR. He is still with the team now. We have a bad problem with some Saints, some of the Saints guys going to other teams. But he's a guy that I'm interested in seeing because we know that Zach Bond has yet to be the guy. I mean, he's yet to be a guy at all in terms of success. But he's yet to be a guy that does anything defensively. Zach Bond's basically become an elite special teamer. And it should be noted, shout out to our friend Ross Jackson, special teams has its place in today's world of football. He's a good special teamer. Yeah, you got that. But you kind of want more from that. And I think that's where guys like DeMarco Jackson come in and hoping that they can provide an impact. Now, you don't have Jordan Jackson, who was the other Jackson, in this set from last year. He ended up getting picked up by, who's he with now? Jordan Jackson. He might be with the Broncos over there with Peyton, if I remember right. So you still need to address DT, but that Zach Bond was a miss, but maybe DeMarco now getting an opportunity can show up. A funny guy says the defensive lineman signed a future contract at the end of the year with the Broncos. Yeah, that would be Jackson, the other Jackson, Jordan Jackson. Gerald says Zach Bond was always suited to stand up and rush the passer. That is what he did in college, and that's not ever translated here in New Orleans. And I think some of that we can probably attribute to how they just envisioned him, and that wasn't what they were envisioning, so they never really went that route. I think that that was kind of wrong. I've been on record saying that, you know, they should have not drafted him if that's all that he was going to be. They envisioned him to be more the 2020, that whole, you know, retrospective thing. But even then, he didn't really fit the team. And you were gambling, granted you were only gambling with a third-round pick, that you were going to turn him into that linebacker. You were going to develop him. You know, and sometimes that does work. Development is a real thing. An example of development working in a positive way. Trey Hendrickson developed as you would expect. I mean, hell, look at our good friend Caden Ellis. Even though he wasn't a third-round pick, he developed and became a starter. That's what you're hoping for. Zach Bond has not had it happen for him. And I guess if we want to play like the overly optimistic card, and I know a lot of y'all are not going to want to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway because you know what? It happened last year, so I want to give it a chance this year. Caden Ellis was a seventh-round pick, right, in 2019. It took Caden Ellis like 4 years in the league to finally just have an opportunity and it click. And then it finally worked. Maybe the same thing happens for Zach Baum. I don't know. I'm not saying it will, but I got to be hopeful. Like, I've got to want it to work, right? Development is a process. It works for some, and it doesn't work for others. Zach Baum has basically never become the guy that you hoped he would be coming out of the third round. But, you know, Caden Ellis took till he was, what, 28 years old. Now he's going to be a full-time starter. Maybe that's what it takes for Zach Baum. I don't know. I'm just trying to grab some positivity out of the ethos and pull it in. But, you know, he's never changed into a full-style, you know, linebacker. He was a stand-up rusher in college and a very good stand-up rusher in college, but is what it is. Jonathan says, I want all three on the field. Alante is more physical than Adebo, better suited for the blitz. You know, I'm curious to see how they're going to address the slot corner position this year. I think that New Orleans is lucky because they've got a wealth of talent, and I'm not one that believes Adebo is worthless now. I do think that he took a significant step back in year two, but sometimes that happens to players in the league. I still think he's a talented guy, and whether they choose to operate him in the slot or what, I think that no matter what, the depth of this secondary unit is really good. I think it's really good, and they could, of course, add more to it. I've had a couple of people on Twitter asking, hey, do they bring back CJ, GJ, and I feel pretty strongly that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson does not come back to New Orleans. He might go to Denver. I don't think he comes to New Orleans. But so far, Rev's prediction of nobody will pay that man to be a top NFL safety is still true. Hey, and it can happen, right? It can definitely happen. I'm not saying it can't. But CJ, GJ, you watching all these guys get signed. Look at everybody around the league getting signed. He ain't one of them yet. So what's going to happen with that? I don't know. What's going to happen? You know, you look around the league at some of these contracts going out, all these different players getting signed. And Chauncey, for a lot of people, was considered, you know, a top five free agent around the entire league. And it's almost like nobody's even sniffing that direction. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not trying to be, like, super vindictive. You know, but you look at, like, Javon Hargrave, he went to San Francisco, and he was a guy that I think a lot of people had at the top maybe of their board. Orlando Brown was a big one. He's going to Cincy. You look at just the various options that are available. Why is Chauncey not even feeling like he's getting a doorbell ring, man? Like, almost want to feel bad. Now, granted, you don't have a lot of people at his position signing, but you did just have Jesse Bates go to Atlanta. And Jesse Bates is a traditional safety, fits really well, and he signed a four-year, $64 million contract, which is, if we do some quick math, is $16 million a year. That's basically what Chauncey was wanting. Chauncey was sitting here going, hey, I'm a full-time safety. I'm good enough. Pay me my money. And yet Jesse Bates got $16 a year. Now, I'm not saying Jesse Bates isn't worth it. I've actually been a Jesse Bates fan. I told y'all that I liked the Von Bell-Jesse Bates combo in Cincy. I thought they were good players. But this is a guy that's never been to a Pro Bowl. He's a second-team All-Pro, but never a first-team All-Pro. And a traditional free safety, he also doesn't typically pull in crazy interception numbers, actually very similar to Marcus Williams in terms of the amount of interceptions that he typically reels in a year. And I think he's a talented player. I liked him. Hell, I would have loved him to be in New Orleans. But here you have Jesse Bates getting a $16 million year deal. And then you even look at, you know, Jamil Dean with Tampa signing a 3-for-45. You had, what was the old James Bradbury, like ancient James Bradbury, just signed a contract. Re-signed, 3 years, $38 million. James Bradbury is going to be like 51 years old when the season starts. Re-signed him. The Eagles did, as in the same team Chauncey's with. Jordan Poyer. Jordan Poyer. He's like 50 years old. He signed with the Bills. Re-signed with the Bills. Cameron Sutton signed with the Lions. I mean, where is Chauncey in all this? Gerald says CJ GJ did lead the league in picks. It's got to be his attitude. And I think the same thing I personally think the same thing that got him in trouble in New Orleans was getting him in trouble around the league. I think that's what's happening. Chauncey came in and said, hey, I'm an elite nickel corner, but I want to be paid like an elite safety. Jesse Bates just got that money. Is Chauncey going to get that anywhere? And I do think that Chauncey is very talented on the field. I've never denied that. But I do believe personally that he was a better elite nickel corner than he was a traditional safety. Then he went and trash-talked his DC after the Super Bowl, which I don't care. Look, let me just be 100%. I'm keeping it 100. It doesn't matter if Chauncey's right or wrong on that one, because I'll just say I kind of agree with some of the things he was saying. But you don't ever go and badmouth your DC like that right after a Super Bowl. I mean, that, going into a contract year, going into I'm trying to get paid year. Mm-mm. I don't know about that. I don't agree. So it doesn't matter what he's right or wrong, right? It's if you want to get a job and you want to get paid, you got to be Chauncey, not saucy, right? And he got a little too saucy. He got a little too saucy. And the bag that is there to be secured, he's letting it slip through his fingers. So I'm curious what ends up happening with him. I'm curious. I mean, as a player, I love the player. Absolutely love CJ. And I will not talk negatively about him as a player in New Orleans. As a, just like how he was interacting with the staff and the other players in the locker room, obviously that went sour. But damn, it's really surprising to not see that guy getting the contract yet. I'm curious what he ends up getting. If he only ends up getting, though, $12 million a year, you got to think that that's a loss, right? You got to think that that's a miss. Because you've got that Super Bowl caliber team re-signing aging veterans like Darius Slay. Not Darius Slay having a damn good season. But Darius Slay just got, what, $21 million a year at 32 with Philly. Like, and I realize that corners and safeties are not interchangeable, but $21 million a year for Darius Slay? And I'm not saying Darius Slay was bad. Darius Slay was good. But holy crap. Holy crap. And Chauncey is just in the wind. In the wind. And TJ says Slay plays more position, more important position. And agreed. But my counter to that is, I'm not saying Chauncey should get $21 million. But the fact that he didn't even get a contract that Jesse Bates got is just a little surprising to me. Did you talk about the left guard we signed? You mean we re-signed or restructured Andres Pete? Restructured Andres Pete? Daniel says, say we're making moves okay, but my deal is DA is still a bad motivator, communicator. However, I think Mickey is making great moves. We definitely got better in the offseason. If we're grading guys by their job, Mickey Loomis, I think, is doing a very good job in the offseason so far. He has added a very good running back, not amazing running back. I think the touchdowns make him look a little bit better than he is, but he is a very good running back. Starting caliber quarterback who's going to be your starter for at least 3 years. Unless Derek Carr just completely is horrible, you got a starter at quarterback and the best option. You then went and filled in multiple defensive tackles. You re-signed arguably your most important restricted free agent, Juwan Johnson. No offense, Caden Ellis, but Johnson's a starter. Ellis was not. He's making good moves. He finally moved off of the pet project of Marcus Davenport. And look, I do genuinely wish Marcus Davenport the best. I really, really do. I really do. I hope that he balls out in the Vikings as long as he's not playing New Orleans. I hope he stays healthy. But man, this offseason, I feel like Mickey Loomis is doing a daggum good job. And if you disagree, I want to hear why in the chat. Like, I really do. If you disagree, I want to hear why. And if you do, that is okay. I want to be very clear. I'm not here to shame anybody. If you think that the Saints are sucking it up, I want to know why. What do you like or dislike about any of them? But I'm really happy with the moves that we've seen the Saints make so far. And I think that they are doing a better job than I anticipated them doing this year. I truly believe that. I believe that they're doing a better job than I anticipated. Jerry says, I'm glad Davenport's gone. Fair. Daniel says, this is not DA's team. This is Mickey's team. DA just coaches defense, and Pete coaches O. Well, I can tell you that Dennis does have a lot of control on a lot of aspects, so I can't go that far. But I do believe, or at least I agree with you, that the role of roster creation, which probably would have been a lot more Sean Payton, well, Mickey Loomis is kind of in control of that right now. And that's how it should be, honestly. That's how it should be. Your general manager should be the one in charge, and you should either have success or failures based on how you put it together. So I think that as far as that's concerned, Mickey Loomis is doing the right thing. I don't think that a head coach should have complete control over that. That doesn't mean I don't think that they should have any control, but there are some head coaches out there who demand full control of their roster. I think part of a GM is knowing how to properly build a team. And I think that's what he's doing right now. Now, what I'm going to do real quick is, because it's been a couple days, I'm going to recap the signings around our division and just remind y'all what's happened so far. So, and this is going to count signings and re-signings, all right? This is signings and re-signings. Atlanta, Lorenzo Carter, 2 years, $9 million. They traded for Jonnu Smith. Chris Lidstrom, 5 years, $105 million, re-signed there. Brought in David Onyemata, the former Sate, 3 for $35 million. A punter, Bradley Pinion, 3 for $8.6 million. Safety, Jesse Bates, the third, bringing him in from Cincinnati, 4 years, $64 million. Caleb McGarry, that is, Saints fans will recognize that as Speed Bump McGee, got re-signed for 3 for $34.5 million. They brought in Caden Ellis, who is obviously former New Orleans Saint, 3 for $21.5 million. Quarterback Taylor Heineke, 2 for $20 million, and then fullback Keith Smith, and then obviously Ryan Nielsen. Let's go down to what Carolina's been doing. Not as many names, but some interesting names. They brought in Von Bell, safety, who was with the Saints, obviously was up in Cincinnati the past few years. I loved him as a down low attack safety. He was really good in that role. Brought in Shai Tuttle, another former New Orleans Saint. 3 years and 19.5. Shout out to Shai Tuttle. I thought he had a down year last year as a run blocker, but overall, he's been a good player. Andy Dalton, 2 years, $10 million. I want nothing but success for Andy Dalton. Hayden Hurst, 3 for $21.7 million. Then they brought in Miles Sanders. This was a big one for me. Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders is a running back, but I was really impressed by Carolina nabbing him. I think that kind of brings a little bit more life to them. And they also got Bradley Bozeman, 3 for $18 million, and then Deshaun Williams. Now, I'll be honest. I can't help but want to root for Andy Dalton, and I love Von Bell. Von Bell is one of the nicest people when it came to interacting with the media and everything. So I want success for them individually, but everybody else. That funny guy says Shai Tuttle was overpaid. Bro is at best a rotational piece. See, I think that's a little insulting to Shai Tuttle. Now, the key is understanding what he is, right? Shai Tuttle is a run-stopping one-tech. He is a true nose in a league that the fans have forgotten about true noses. Now, he has only played in the league for 4 years, but his past 2 years, I think if you put his tape up nose-to-nose, pun intended here, against any other nose, he's had over the past 2 years really, really good performance. And for a nose tackle, they're only going to play between 40 and 60% of the snaps. That's exactly what he did with New Orleans. He played between 40 and 60% of the snaps. Now, in terms of overpaid, well, that's kind of opinion on how much you want to pay a nose tackle. But I don't think that he hasn't earned it. And some people value that position a lot more than others, right? And also, I can't ever disrespect Shai Tuttle, because if you remember, he's the one that put Matt Ryan's face into the AstroTurf, and that's a big thing for me. Absolutely love it. All right, so that was the Panthers and the Falcons. Let's move on down. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then we'll cover New Orleans last of what's been happening so far. So Tampa, Jamel Dean, 4 for $52 million. Big one on that one. You got defensive lineman Anthony Nelson, 2 years for $11 million. Quarterback Baker Mayfield. Oh, man, I can't wait to see how that plays out. 1 for $8.5 million. Guard Aaron Stinney, 1 year, $2.5 million. Linebacker Lavonte David, 1 for $7 million, and then Chase Edmonds. And then finally, your New Orleans Saints. And what we'll do is when we finally get kind of this free agency period kind of slowing down a little bit, we're going to grade, and we're going to grade who had the best offseason for the division. Now, I already know all of y'all are going to be biased, and everybody's going to pick the New Orleans Saints, but we're going to try to be, at least we're going to attempt to be, pragmatic, I'll go through it pragmatically. We're going to try to be as honest as possible and see what it looks like at the end. But here's what the Saints have done so far. Derek Carr, 4 years, $150 million. It's very hard to argue that Derek Carr is not currently the best quarterback in the entire division. If you are going to try to argue with me and tell me, and look, we do get every now and then fans from other teams here on the channel, and I actually welcome it. I really do. I love when fans of other teams come and visit the podcast because I think open discourse is great. I really do. But if you're trying to tell me that Andy Dalton is currently set to be the full-time starter in Carolina, assuming, you know, Matt Corral doesn't win that position, or if you're trying to tell me that Desmond Ridder is going to be that guy, or if you're trying to tell me that Baker Mayfield or slash Blaine Gabbert slash Kyle Trask, if you're trying to tell me that any of those guys are better than Derek Carr, I'm sorry. Even if you dislike Derek Carr, I don't see how you can make a logical argument that those are better. But those are the quarterbacks in the NFC South. I think the Saints are definitely in a better position there. But beyond Derek Carr, you brought in Nathan Shepard, Kalen Sanders, who we just talked about, Juwan Johnson. You did re-sign JT Gray, your star-studded special teamer, 3 years, 11.11. You brought back Michael Thomas, 1 year for 10. Jameis Winston is now your backup. I'd argue your backup is almost as good as your other starters around the league. You got Tano Passignon, who I have honestly liked in the couple of years he's been in New Orleans when he's been on the field, and you got him for a really cheap deal, 2 for $6 million. Then you got Jamal Williams, who we just talked about, 3 years for $12 million. And I want to point out real quick, listen to me. Jamal Williams, 3 for $12 million, is so much nicer, and it tastes so much sweeter to me when I go and look over at Carolina and I see Miles Sanders, 4 for $25 million. So you got one guy averaging $3 million a year. Or $4 million a year, I'm sorry. And you got another guy almost doubling it. Woo! Feel like the Saints won that one. Feel like the Saints did a dang good job on contracts there. So, Ty Hartley, you're listening to the show, which I know you are. Shout out, because Carolina just brought in a new starting running back and they paid him over $6 million a year. You brought in a new running back who's going to be starting predominantly, heck of a lot less. So I'm excited. And I also do have to give a real quick update. I kind of hate that this guy has gone to another team because I really liked him. But Deontay Hardy has signed with the Buffalo Bills, 2 years, 13.5. So everybody wish him success as well. Wish him success as well. Deontay Hardy going up into Buffalo. And I do hope that he has success, right? You know, I hate to see it. He had such a down year last year after being so explosive for years before. Former All-Pro as a returner, one of the better returners that we've ever had in New Orleans. And it just kind of sucks to see him not leave on a high note. And I think that the offense that Buffalo has, he could really pop up and shine. So more power to him. But yeah, he signed with the Buffalo Bills this past week. So there's your updates for it. Daniel says, here's my deal. The first round great quarterback fails more than it doesn't. College is a different game. And sure, CJ or Bryce could be great, but odds are way more likely they aren't. Quarterback is the most difficult position in the league. Most difficult position in the game. Being a first rounder gives you a better chance of success historically, but it definitely doesn't guarantee it. And I would rather have a proven Pro Bowl level quarterback, even if he's not a Hall of Famer, than a rookie. I still want a rookie, but I don't want to have to rely on a rookie to win right now. I don't want to have to rely on a rookie to win right now, which is what some teams will have to do. Millie says this team is full of talent. DA and Pete Carmichael have no excuse for the play calling. Imagine Jamal Williams, AK, and Taysom running the ball. Who are you stopping? I think that the red zone area of the field should see significant improvement. If it doesn't, we are going to be spending a lot of podcast episodes really chewing out Pete Carmichael. How do you have Jamal Williams, Taysom Hill, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, Juwan Johnson, and not consistently convert in the red zone for touchdowns? It's really difficult. Really, really difficult to not see that being successful. Really, really difficult. It's also why, as this continues to happen, I am more and more just on board the offensive slash defensive line choo-choo train, ladies and gentlemen. And it's not really fair because those who follow the podcast for a long time know that I'm a massive fan of addressing the trenches. Trench warfare is where this game is still won. It's a high-profile, prolific passing attack, and everybody loves it. And when you play Madden, you're not running. You're running back 2,000 yards. You're trying to get your quarterback to throw 5,000-6,000 yards with 60 TDs. And don't lie and tell me that you are, because you know there's always one crazy person. But the truth is, this game is still won up front between the men weighing 300 pounds, between the height of 6 foot and about 6'6". Those are who still win the game. And if that is what the Saints pick in the late 20s, I will be such a happy camper. I will be happier than a pig in mud. I'm not going to use the other word. I'll be happier than me as a child with cake. I don't care if that brings up fat shaming. It's not the intent. I like cake. The Saints are putting themselves in the position that they need to, which is they are putting themselves in a position to win by drafting the best player available. And if that ends up being, I'm serious, if that ends up being a defensive or offensive lineman, I am here for it. All right, chat, what do y'all think? Jordan says, I think DA has had success with his picks. He drafted Von Miller, Carr, Alante Taylor, and Khalil Mack. So I really wouldn't mind him influencing some of the draft picks. I think he does have influence, Jordan. I do. Now, I do also think that you have an amazing scouting staff here in New Orleans that's been proven year in and year out. I think the biggest key, though, is not only selecting four guys. I think the biggest mistake the Saints have made in the past few years is not enough draft selections. The truth is, you can do an amazing job as a scouting department. You can do an amazing job, you know, even in development. But the truth is, football is a numbers game, and you will not have a draft class that is 100% successful. You're just not going to find it, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm not being negative, okay? I am not. I'm not trying to be negative. I really am not. But let's just be real. You are not going to nail every draft pick. For whatever reason, they don't all work out. You know, you go back to 2017, which is the closest you can say everybody worked out. And it still is. Al-Kadeem Muhammad is in the league, so I guess that's working out for him being a sixth rounder, right? Like, it's technically true. But still have in that same draft class guys who have not come to their full potential. For example, and this is, I am not throwing shade, Alex Anzalone has never reached his full potential. He hasn't. Now, injury, I think, prevented that. But he never reached his full potential. At least he hasn't yet. Ryan Ramczyk actually took a step back, but he is a three-time All-Pro. But he took a step back. You don't expect it. The way that he came in, you expect him to be, like, hardcore dominant for 10 years. And I do still think that 2017 is the best example. But even it has a little bit that you can nitpick here and there. And that's literally the best example. Because if you go to 2016, there's misses there. I'm sorry. I'm officially going to say it. David Onyemata was a miss. David Onyemata was a miss. I'm sorry. Y'all can go argue with somebody else. I'm saying it. Sheldon Rankins, who was injured. And Sheldon Rankins, who had career-ending injuries. And Sheldon Rankins, who had to play behind Nick Fairley before getting a start, has more sacks in less games than David Onyemata. David Onyemata never worked out. Daniel Lasco definitely never worked out. Go back to 2015, though, where you did draft like 8-9 guys. It was okay if not everybody worked out. Stephon Anthony definitely didn't work out. Haloiki Kaha didn't work out because of injury. Garrett Grayson was one of the worst picks they've ever made. But P.J. Williams has been one of the best value picks the New Orleans Saints have ever drafted. Argue with your mother. In terms of depth and value, he has been with this team for 7-8 years, and he's been a consistent contributor. Has he been an amazing player? No. But has he been a consistent contributor in a positive way? Yes. Andres Pete has as well. Tyler Davison was a contributor, now moved on to greener pastures. But Damian Swan didn't work out. Davis Toll never saw a snap. Not a single snap. And he was drafted before Tyler Davison. Go back to 2014. Remember Vinny Sunseri? Remember Kyrie Fort? Remember Stanley Jean-Baptiste? So the point I'm making with all this very long rambling is you want a lot of draft picks. And I don't want to see the Saints make the mistake of what they've basically done last year, and they did the same thing in 2020, is only drafting four or five guys. Draft six or seven players. That way, who doesn't work out, that's okay. We're playing the odds. Somebody else is. John says, even with Jameis returning, do you believe that there is a day two slash three quarterback that fits the Saints offense? Yes, I do. Will it happen? I don't know. But yes, I do. Sam says, better draft, 2006 or 2017. You're talking New Orleans Saints drafts, right? I'm sorry. It's not even close. It's 2017. Like, it's not even close. Look, I love Reggie Bush. But realistically, Reggie Bush was exciting, but he was not worth the second overall pick in the NFL draft. Roman Harper was an amazingly good team safety, but he was not an all-pro level guy. He was not the best safety in the league. Jari Evans was the best guy in the league at his position. Rob Ninkovich was never anything for New Orleans, so he don't really count. Mike Haas never played a down that I can remember. If he ever caught a pass, I don't recall it. Josh Lay never played a down. Zach Streif, yeah, became an amazing guy and now a coach in the league. And then Marcus Colston, all good team players. Why am I emphasizing team? Because they were really good with the team. But we're talking about some guys that transcend being good team. We're talking about guys being all pro, guys being consistent pro bowlers. The 2017 class is literally guys who are the best at their position. Ryan Ramczyk, not this year, but 2 years ago probably, right, even 3 years ago, was arguably the best right tackle in football. Maybe Schwartz had it at right tackle. You look at Marshawn Lattimore, he hasn't had it as consistently for a couple years, but there have definitely been years where he's right there. Best corner, if nothing else, he's top three. Alvin Kamara, that's a story on its own. Trey Henderson speaks for itself. Marcus Williams, well, I think he's criminally underrated, but he's still very good. He would go in that same category. 2017 is a better class. It's not close. 2006 had great team players. 2017 had some of the best players in the league at their position. And to me, that's not close. To me, that's not close. You know, you had two rookies of the year on the same team in the same draft class. It's not even close. That doesn't mean that the 2016 Saints class wasn't ridiculously good. It was. I am not denying that. But you're talking about multiple All-Pros, two rookies of the year in one class. 2006 doesn't come close. Not even close. You say it was close. It's not close. You can't say guys who are All-Pros and rookies of the year and multiple-time Pro Bowlers are the same. Because the only person who's in the argument from the 2006 class of being that level is Jari Evans. Nobody else. Nobody else. Like, I love Marcus Colston. Marcus Colston was never the best wide receiver in the NFL. He was never top five. He wasn't. He was good. Like, he was damn good. Probably the most underrated guy at wide receiver. It's a shame he never made a Pro Bowl. And he probably could have made or should have made at least one. But he was never the best guy in the league. Zach Streif was definitely never the best tackle in the NFL. It's great that he played 150 games, but he was never the best guy in the league. You know, you have multiple guys who never been played, and Roman Harper was never the best guy in the league either. Roman Harper was, I mean, people were making memes of Roman Harper getting chased down by, Sam Bradford. So yeah, it's not even close. I would love to, look, give me 2006 again. Happily. Happily give me the 2006 class on repeat, but I'll take 2017's draft class 100 times out of 100. But give me 2006 any year. Like, if I had to know, like, if you told me this, let me put it this way. You lose credibility when you say not close? No, I don't. No, I don't. I don't lose credibility. Who am I first of all, who am I losing credibility with? And second of all, no, I don't. No, I don't. It's not even close. It's really a gap. The difference between a Marcus Colston level talent and then a Michael Thomas level talent is a big gap, right? It's a big gap. You know, and Colston's a very good player. But the difference between a good player and a great player, Colson's the best Saints receiver ever. Colson's not. No. No, he's not. Not even close. Sorry, it's not. Colston was never anywhere near Michael Thomas's prime talent. Colston wasn't even better than Joe Horn. And Colston was a very good player. But Colston was never that guy. Never that guy. And I love Colston. Hell, I got to talk to Colston multiple times. Amazing freaking player. Great team player. Ring of Honor guy. He was never anywhere near the level of good that Michael Thomas was. Nowhere close. I mean, hell, it says a lot that he was the second fiddle in the middle of his prime when the Saints had Jimmy Graham in their prime offense. Like they had 2011, Jimmy Graham was the guy that they were designing for, not Colson. Ain't never happened to Michael Thomas when he was healthy. It's not even close. That doesn't mean Colson's a bad player. Colson's a really good player. But the difference between being good, like team-level player, and being great is huge. I mean, there's a gap there. And that's kind of what you see. Like, Jarry Evans, the gap between Jarry Evans, for example, and, you know, if he's just a solid starter, the gap between Jarry Evans and Cesar Ruiz right now is massive. You know, it's having a Hall of Fame level ability is so rare. Thomas has played 10 games in 3 years. How did Colson sit out? Well, first of all, you can't really blame a player for injury because injuries happen outside of the control. And if you remember, Thomas's injury, it wasn't like Thomas was in poor conditioning. If anything, Michael Thomas's injury was freaking Sean Payton's fault. So you can't sit there and go, well, Thomas wasn't available. That wasn't on Michael Thomas. Thomas was out there at the final minutes of a game being told to run block when the game was in hand. And I get it. You play the game. But it wasn't like Michael Thomas was out there doing something stupid or reckless. All right? It was just a freak bad injury. You can't blame him for that. But in terms of talent, route running, athletic ability, Michael Thomas would beat the brakes off Marcus Colston. And it's not even close. There's a reason that Michael Thomas set the NFL record for catches and why Michael Thomas is a revered All-Pro and why many thought that he was going to be a Hall of Famer and why Marcus Colston was second fiddle to Jimmy freaking Graham flying airplanes across the city of New Orleans. That doesn't make Marquez Colston a bad player at all. One of the best Saints of all time. But hell, I'll argue he wasn't even better talent-wise than Joe Horn. And you can argue beyond that. And if you get some of the really all-time Saints fans out here and all-time Saints analysts, they're going to tell you that Eric Martin was better than Marquez Colston is. And if you want to go by hardware, and not everybody does, but if you want to go by hardware, Danny Abramowitz was the first Saint to ever win an All-Pro at wide receiver. Danny Abramowitz did that, and those teams crashed. So, and yeah, I agree. Jarry Evans is an all-time great player. Jarry Evans should Hall of Fame level. Like, it's rare to find those guys. You know, Evans is arguably the best offensive lineman New Orleans has ever had. I mean, there's only one Saints offensive lineman that I think is better than Jarry Evans, and that'd be Willie Rofe. But still, I mean, Jarry was insane. But that's kind of my point. Like, Jarry Evans was Michael Thomas level good at his position. And Marcus Colston never was that. So yeah, like when I look at draft classes, and I'm talking comparing class to class, 2017 is a far superior year to 2006, but 2006 is also far superior to 2005, and it's far superior to 2007, and it's far superior to 2008, and it's far superior to 2009. There's levels to it. But 2017 sits like up on its own. It is on its own pedestal. It's just that good. It's just that good. Just to continue this conversation, because I think it's a great conversation. 2016, honestly, is probably the second best. I just happen to believe that there is a wide gap after that. There's a wide gap after that. You know, another good thing to talk about here, since we're talking about it, we're talking draft classes, 2006, or since we're talking top-end talent, third place I probably give to 2011. But the tricky thing is 2011 is two people because everybody else was trash, like everybody else washed out. But you got potentially a Hall of Famer in Cameron Jordan and then probably the second-best running back or third-best, y'all can debate on where it is, running back in team history in Mark Ingram. Now, the rest of the draft fail. But, yeah, anytime you draft a Hall of Famer, it has to immediately be considered part of your best class. I'm just going through and looking at some of the great classes we had just historically. And then there's also some really awful classes we had historically. Oh my goodness. There's some wild ones in here. We're like back in the 90s, man, this team couldn't draft for crap. So the 94 draft was good. Joe Johnson, Mario Bates, Winfred Tubbs. Those are some solid top threes. But, man, they just could not draft down low to save their life. And even the Willie Rofe draft. Look, you had Willie Rofe, but then Irv Smith, who never amounted to anything as a first-round tight end. Reggie Freeman, Lorenzo Neal, who we actually stand Lorenzo Neal in the first round. But only problem with that is Lorenzo Neal was made famous other teams. He only was with New Orleans like his rookie contract, and then he was a freaking all-pro with Drew Brees over in San Diego. So you got Lorenzo Neal, then they had Derrick Brown that class, Tyron Hughes that class, Ronnie Dixon, Othello Henderson, and then John Kirksey. Yeah, I mean, you've had some solid classes in history, but yeah, I think I'm going to stick with my answer of 2017 wins head and shoulders above, but then I would put 2006 second place. But it's just not close for me. Like if I'm ever picking, building a team. Oh, here's another good one. I forgot about this one. This was a great class. All right, listen up. Jim Dombrowski, he was a guard, so many of you probably don't remember who that was, but he was a good guard. Dalton Hilliard, Reuben Mays, Pat Swilling. For the top four picks of the 86 class. Yeah, that's a good freaking class. You got multiple all-time team greats. Both Dalton Hilliard and Reuben Mays were amazing players for this team. Pat Swilling, obviously part of the Dome Patrol. That's a dang good class. Dang good class. You think Saquon was a bad pick at number three since you said Reggie was? 100%. And I've said that from the jump. 100%. I would not have taken Saquon Barkley in the top five. There's not a running back alive that I would take top five. The position itself just isn't important enough. And the truth is, the same thing was the case in 2006. Modern NFL, the running back is not important enough right now to do that. Would you have paid Caden Ellis what the Falcons paid him? Hell no. Like, I'm very happy for Caden Ellis, but would I have done it? Nope. Because he's not going to be a starter. Sam says, got a defined metric. I think character is huge as other intangibles. 2006 class plus Vilmon Shockey equals Super Bowl. Well, I mean, if that's your argument, the 2017 Saints class is also full of extremely high character guys, right? They have all those same intangibles. Winning a Super Bowl is a team effort. You can't just give that to the class because, you know, that 2017 class should have won the 2018 Super Bowl, but they got robbed by the refs. You know, I don't think that's really fair. If we're just talking about talent to talent, though, player to player, what we can actually measure, 2017 beats the brakes off 2006, but only because 2017 literally has guys that multiple potential Hall of Famers. And multiple All-Pros already. And multiple Rookies of the Year. And that's unheard of. Now, we'll see if it ends up working out that way. But in terms of how they perform on the field, there's a couple of guys in that list that could end up in the Hall. We'll see if it happens, though. It's not a guarantee. Obviously, time will tell. There's a couple 2017 guys who are going to end up in the Hall. At least there's the potential for that. We'll just wait and see if it actually happens. AK knocking some dude out, Lattimore toting guns. Sam, look. I don't like to drug up Sate's dirty laundry. But let me just go ahead and tell you right now. The 2006 class was not full of Sunday-going church people who were just like completely devoted to the Lord. All right? Having gotten to work in this industry, let me just go ahead and tell you, a lot of your favorite players, there's a reason they say never meet your heroes. And Marcus Coles is not one of those guys. That's got to be one of the most genuine, loving, just like kind-hearted people in the world. But especially with some of these guys coming in the league, 20 years old, getting millions, what's happened with AK and Marshawn is not unique. All right? It's not unique. You can't just like look at something on paper, see a couple of reports, and assume guys are bad guys. So, I'm just telling you, I mean, what's... There are some really dark secrets from the Saints locker room that I will never share. To put it that way. I'm not about that. 2006 class went the distance. But so did the 2017 class. Again, you can't credit a single class with being the reason the Super Bowl happened. That's just not fair. I mean, Carl Nix, was he 2007 or 2008? Because Carl Nix was just as important as Jarre Evans at the time. Carl Nix was a must-have at the time. You had to rebuild that entire interior. He was a big thing. Jermon Bushrod, he came like a year later, I think, so you could solidify that left side of the offensive line. Because it was still a problem. Look, Jarre Evans joined. You had Jonathan Stinchcomb, you know, on the right side. But that whole left side of the line had to be rebuilt still. I mean, that's a big deal. What about Tracy Porter? He had to get drafted. I think he was in 2008. You know, without Tracy Porter, you definitely don't win the Super Bowl, literally. So, I mean, at what point do we kind of jump in and say, hey, can't just give it to 2006. A lot of things had to work. A lot of things had to work. And if I remember right, Tracy Porter and Carl Nix were the same draft class. So, you can't just give it to 2006 and say, hey, they won a Super Bowl, because two of your main Super Bowl pieces came 2 years later. So, it's a good chat, though. Good chat. I mean, I'm here for it, but give me the rookies of the years and the all pros above the Ring of Honor guys. Right? Like, there's just levels to it. And almost the entire 2006 class, we can argue, should be in the Ring of Honor, except for Rob Ninkovich, which, you know, hell, Peyton talks about being one of his biggest misses of all time. But the 2017 is the same thing, right? Like, the entire 2017 class can also go in the Ring of Honor, essentially, yet they can also go above that. They can also go above that. Well, good chat. I like it. I like it. If AK is a better pro, then why is AK facing 6-game suspension with a possible end of his career for beating up someone in Vegas? Oh, man. I'm not about to dive into talking dirty about people. Let's put it that way, Hemi. I'm not about to deep dive into talking dirty about people. Y'all can do that, but your statement was he's a better pro, and then you brought up an off-the-field thing. That doesn't determine how good of a pro football player you are. Because Alvin Kamara is hands down better than any running back to ever put on a uniform in New Orleans. Like, and that's not even close. So then you get like a guy because of who he is versus what can he do. I mean, 42. Obviously one of the worst human beings that we've ever seen put on a football uniform. That's got to be an absolutely awful person. And yet, you don't win the Super Bowl without him. This is a fact. We can talk about 2006 draft class all we want. You don't win the 2009 season without 42. You just don't. He's a trash person. Absolutely awful human being. Like, proven in court, awful human being. Let me be very clear. Proven in court, awful human. All right? Well, let's see how court determines Alvin Kamara is. But literally proven terrible person. You don't win a Super Bowl without him. So some people can separate the player from the person. Some people can't. I am going to judge what football based on football because I don't know most of these people personally. Very few of them I do. So I'm going to kind of like sidestep that one. And like, hey, if you dislike AK because of things that you've seen and heard and maybe videos you've watched of that incident, that's cool. But if we're talking about like as a player, offensive rookie of the year, best running back the team's ever had, multiple-time pro bowler, multiple-time all-pro, second team. He never made a first-team all-pro, but he's a six-time pro bowler. Was it six? Is it five? Five-time pro bowler, two-time all-pro, rookie of the year, running back. over Reggie Bush, who, let's just put it this way, y'all. This is probably going to hurt some feelings because I really do love Reggie Bush. Alvin Kamara is everything that Reggie Bush was supposed to be. That's exactly what it is. Alvin Kamara is everything that Reggie Bush was supposed to be. And you took Alvin Kamara in the third round. Hudat says he doesn't agree. Why don't you agree with the Hudat? Because they're not different players. King Troll says they're different players. They're not. Stylistically, they're actually very similar. Now, college? What Bush did in college is unreal. College, like USC Reggie Bush, is very different than NFL Reggie Bush. USC Reggie Bush is still one of the greatest football players to ever take a college football field. NFL Reggie Bush was a glorified return guy who could take swing passes and screens. Bush was never an elite runner until he went to Miami. And then he finally took off. And look, and that's great for him. Alvin Kamara was elite from the jump. Alvin Kamara made it to where you could not hand him the football. Because Mark Ingram was a Pro Bowl. Y'all, some people forget. Mark Ingram was a Pro Bowl level running back. Like Mark Ingram was having the prime of his career. Mark Ingram was doing great. It wasn't like Mark Ingram was ass. Mark Ingram had his rookie year where he had to go side by side with Ingram. Ingram still ran 1,100 yards, averaged 5 yards a freaking carry while facing 80% of his boxes with 8 men or more, which was the most in the NFL at the time, and scored 12 touchdowns. Mark Ingram had one of the best running back years you've ever seen as a Saint. And then literally a year later, Kamara's like, yeah, you got to take a sidestep, boo. That's how good Alvin Kamara was. The only reason Reggie Bush got more carries is because either Deuce McAllister got hurt or Pierre Thomas was absent. Never once did he become the guy that they're like, hey, he's got to be a full-time starter. Reggie Bush never earned full-time stock. AK did. That's the difference. Now, if we're talking like colleges, oh, dude, give me college Reggie Bush over college AK all day long. For whatever happened. Whatever switch got flipped, whatever crazy ethos happened, I don't know. Who knows, man? Maybe a freaking dandelion with special magical powers floated off and landed on Alvin Kamara's nose and became a freaking superhero. I don't know what caused it. But I'll tell you that Reggie Bush was nowhere near the player that Alvin Kamara was. And need I remind everybody, Alvin Kamara was also a damn good returner before they had to stop letting him return the ball because they got worried he was going to get injured. People forget that too. His rookie year, he had a freaking return touchdown. His rookie year, Alvin Kamara's rookie year, he only was given the ability to return 11 times, kickoff returns. He averaged 32 yards a return, and he had a touchdown as well. And then they were like, yeah, you need to chill this out because we don't want you to get hurt. And they stopped doing it. In fact, over the past 3 seasons, he's only had 2 kick returns total. They've completely pulled him out of that. Completely pulled him out. Now, Reggie, dude has some bomb punt returns. But Alvin Kamara literally took a running back in Mark Ingram who was on pace to be the best running back you ever saw in a Saints uniform and literally forced the team to put him number 2. And that says a lot. That is insane to me. Like, I don't know if I'll ever properly be able to, like, it would really take me just sitting down and building a devoted film study to show people that, like, people don't realize how good Mark Ingram was when he finally hit his prime right as Alvin Kamara is getting drafted. 2016 is where Mark Ingram finally hit it. Like, he nailed it. And between 2016 and 2017, those 2 years, Mark Ingram rushed for over 2,000 yards. He had almost 3,000 total yards from scrimmage over those 2 years. He had 22 total touchdowns, and he averaged 5 yards a carry. That doesn't count how many TDs he had in receiving, which I think was 5, how many he was averaging in terms of yards per reception, and he had like an 80% catch rate. In fact, Mark Ingram led the NFL among running backs in catch rate and the yards per reception. The dude had hit his stride and arguably could have become an all-pro. And then Alvin Kamara comes in as a rookie and forces that whole thing to derail. Now, it works out great for both for New Orleans because they become this dynamic duo for 3 years. In 2016 to 2018, you see some of the best running back performance you've ever seen in Saints uniform. But in terms of ascension, what Mark Ingram did in 16 and 17, this dude was doing something that nobody in New Orleans had ever done and is leading the league in multiple categories. And then Alvin Kamara comes in and in 1 year pushes that same dude to the side. And that'll never be unimpressed. That's like one of the most impressive things ever to me. That's so ridiculously impressive. That's the power of Alvin Kamara. And even though I do love Reggie Bush, like I think Reggie Bush, one, I love watching his highlights. I'll never forget, you know, when he's, you know, jumping like 8 yards back over into the end zone in Miami. Freaking amazing moment. But you look at even 2009. Did he ever push for the starting job? Like, did they ever have to go, man, we got to give it to Reggie? No. That was Pierre Thomas's role, which is why Pierre Thomas was getting all the big chunks. Pierre Thomas had the success there, and he never lost it. He even had Mike Bell had more rushing yards than Reggie Bush, and Mike Bell was only the short yardage guy. They only used Mike Bell to try to score in the red zone and win on short downs. And I'm not saying that Reggie Bush is like trash. I'm just saying like this goes back to like that greater good. Reggie Bush was a good running back for the Saints. Alvin Kamara is freaking great. But as Dupree says, is Reggie Bush even a top five running back? No. In my opinion, he's not. Now, if you out there, and here, Chad, before we wrap up, here's class time. Y'all start, you list your top five running backs in team history. You list your top five running backs in team history. And I'm not going to judge you for who they are. I'll tell you who mine are. I'm not even going to necessarily put them in a specific order, but I'll tell you who mine are. Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, Deuce McAllister, George Rogers, and Pierre Thomas. Those are my top five running backs of all time in a New Orleans Saints uniform. Those are my five. And the George Rogers one, honestly, you could argue could be Dalton Hilliard, and I'm okay with that. Those are my top five. And then, honestly, I can probably go three or four more before I even mention Reggie Bush. Because as much hate as Ricky Williams gets for his trade, which wasn't his fault, it's not Ricky Williams' fault that Mike Ditka basically traded 2 whole years for him. Ricky Williams was a damn good running back on a team that sucked. There was nobody on the 99 team except freaking Ricky Williams. You know, I'm not going to bring him. Chuck Muncy was an amazing Saint from back in the day. You know, he's not even in my top five. Sam says, Mark Ingram had a handful of decent years, but the Saints would have loved to have let him go and signed Chris Ivory. No, they wouldn't have, Sam. Let me just go ahead and give you firsthand account. No. Would they have liked to keep Chris Ivory? Eh. Was Mark Ingram always going to be the number one guy? Yup. There was no chance Chris Ivory was going to be Mark Ingram's replacement. No shot. I'm going to go ahead and correct that one as someone who's talked. No. Mark Ingram was the guy. That's just from back in the day where there was a time where the Saints used – when Mark Ingram came in the league, they used him like they used Mike Bell. They used Mark Ingram in red zone and short yardage situations. But they were never going to just bypass Ingram and go with someone else. Because if you remember, Chris Ivory popped off in 2010, and what did they do? Drafted a running back in the first round. Chris Ivory was never near as good of a player as Mark Ingram was. And Chris Ivory was a standout dude who went and actually had a good career, solid career. Chris Ivory was never as good or talented of a player as Mark Ingram was. Saints saw that. Why they let Chris Ivory go. Brian says theirs is Dalton Hilliard, Deuce McAllister, Pierre Thomas, Ricky Williams, Earl Campbell. Really going to include Earl Campbell in that? Like, I know technically Earl Campbell played for the Saints, but I don't know if I would count him in my list. I mean, it's cool. I love that you threw it in there. He is a Hall of Famer. But by the time New Orleans got him, man, like, you were getting a shell of Earl Campbell. But, I mean, it is true, and I think, you know, some new Saints fans might not know that. You do have a Hall of Fame running back who used to play for the Saints and Earl Campbell, but, man, Earl Campbell and, like, the mid-80s was not the Earl Campbell of the late 70s. And that's back when running backs got just run to hell, and they lasted 5 years, and they were done. So, but yeah, I mean, he did play for New Orleans. So, I'm going to see some of these other fives here. Who's another five? I like chat getting in. We get some good conversations in here. Well, AK, Deuce, Ricky, Ingram, Rogers, or Muncy? See, Suave, I know this is dangerous, and I've gotten to work with both these guys, and I've gotten to work with Deuce a lot more because Deuce was really active in media as I was getting into scouting and everything. But I would take Mark Ingram over Deuce McAllister. But that's a personal preference thing right there. Honestly, if somebody puts Deuce McAllister second, I'm not going to fret over it. But again, this goes back to, I think, people don't realize how good Ingram was. I think a lot of that is because, with Ingram at least, his first 3 years in the league, he was used in a way that is almost like the Marcus Davenport thing. Like, he was a first rounder, and then they only really used him as a short yardage guy. And he never blew up. And then it took him 5 years to blow up because of how the Saints were using him. And I think that initial impression has never left. But I'm just going to keep it real with y'all. It's going to take Alvin Kamara 2 years to bypass Mark Ingram's yardage record. It's going to take him 2 years. There's no way Kamara does it this year, especially with that suspension looming. It's going to take at least 2 years for him to surpass Mark Ingram in rushing yardage for the Saints. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? So, Prime Deuce was something special before the knee injury, before two knee injuries. And heck yeah, he was. Deuce McAllister is an amazing player. Keep in mind, please understand, I am not trashing Deuce. I mean, Deuce McAllister is the one that I really grew up watching. Deuce McAllister was freaking amazing. There are a couple things that Ingram did better. Ingram was a better receiver out of the backfield. Now, keep in mind that there's a time gap there, and that became more important for running backs the deeper we got into the 2000s. So Ingram was a better receiving back in terms of taking on the screens, how much he averaged in those type of plays, his catch percentage. Now, McAllister was good. He's definitely ahead of his time. And, you know, coming out of Ole Miss and everything, they used him in that regard. But Ingram was just really special in that. One thing with McAllister, though, and this is kind of part of, you know, what ended up hurting him, is he was also a traditional bell cow, which doesn't really exist anymore. Mark Ingram was a bell cow, but there was, two straight years where Deuce McAllister ran for 320 carries or more, which is killer on a running back's body, right? But, I mean, either way, if somebody wants to put McAllister above Ingram, I got no problem with that. I got no problem with that at all. So, Brian says, I hated Deuce in college because he would give LSU defense the business. He was insane. Sam says, Deuce played when the running game was dominant. Ingram had two good years. He was by committee, but Sean always had a stable, never a featured back. To say that Ingram only had two good years is pretty insulting to Mark Ingram. That's pretty insulting to Mark Ingram. Mark Ingram had four straight years of 1,000 yards from scrimmage in New Orleans. Four straight. And then 2018, which was the year that he got a little hurt, he fell short by like 170 yards. I mean, to say that he only had two good years in New Orleans is kind of crazy. The man literally in that four-year period averaged almost 5 yards a carry. I think he had like 5,200 total scrimmage yards, close to 40 touchdowns. No, Mark Ingram dominated for 4 years after they stopped using him as a short yardage guy. And then he went to Baltimore and did it again with Lamar Jackson. Then he finally came back here and was, you know, he ended his career. So. Ingram even went to Baltimore and kept balling. He did. So. Crazy times. But, man, we've been an hour and 15. We got to wrap up today. We got more stuff to talk about, though. I think it's a great thing about, you know, this offseason, man. It is definitely not boring at all. It has been popping, and I love it. Absolutely love it. So, appreciate y'all that have been here, came in, hung out, chilling with us. Let me go ahead and I ruined my screen here real quick, but put this back up there. Who dat to you? God bless. I appreciate y'all coming and checking out the channel. Deuces, that's me. I'm going to catch you on the next one. And hopefully we got some more crazy signings, and we got to do more draft prep. Do that. God bless. Catch you on the next one. Join the Discord if you haven't already. I'm out.